think you're really going to enjoy this episode of Nurturing Wellbeing with Kurt Kelly. I bring a really good friend of mine in, Dr. Elizabeth Winter. She has a new book that she is going to talk about. And as she is transitioning now as a national speaker, working with Youth Voice. I'm so excited to have Dr. Elizabeth Winter. Dr. Winter, thank you for being here. You're a joy. Here's her bona fides. She went to Florida's finest institute of higher learning, Florida State University. Yeah, go Noles. But she also has her master's degree, got her doctorate from Nova University, and is just a subject matter expert when it comes, particularly for youth, issues around youth and youth transitioning from being in the foster care system to now moving into society. First of all, welcome. And tell me a little bit. Let's go to your book. I know it's coming out on December 11th, but tell us a little bit about it.
Sure. So, you know, just like you and I, right, we've spent a long time in child welfare, a quarter of a century for me, right? So not a short period of time. And often as a nonprofit leader, you learn to bite your tongue, right? There's things you want to say, but we've learned really well to bite our tongue. And so I used to joke that at some point I'd write my books and it would be called I Got S to Say. because I wanted to
But say, that's not the title I have.
That's not the title. That's not the title. But you know, I finally got an opportunity to write all the things. I am a researcher. I am a big nerd. My dissertation was on youth aging out of the foster care system and has been a passion for 20 years. I had a moment, right, where I could sit and write and do some deep thought. I had recently completed a literature review on permanent connections. And in talking to, you know, 35 states that joined us for Foster Youth Voice Month, you know, identifying like what is the one thing, like I think about Malcolm Gladwell and the tipping point, right? Mm-hmm. What is the one small thing that if we change could change everything else, right? And when we think about foster youth, we're concerned about housing and employment and education and support systems and resources, right? All of those things they're facing when they leave care can be solved simply by having a positive adult connection, but not just one, having a village, right? And so what has happened in foster care over the years is these young people first lose their connection often with their bio family and their relatives, sometimes their siblings, sadly. And then over time, when placement changes happen and different things happen during their time in foster care, we continue to see serial losses, right? Changing of schools. Now you've lost your school community. You've lost the teacher, the coaches that you had a relationship with. Changing in the neighborhood, right? You've lost your community, your friends, you know, that your extracurricular activities, all of those things. And so what happens by the end, right? By the time they turn 18 and we haven't achieved legal permanence. And I always say for those youth that are aging out, we failed them as a system. And often there's a list of lies that I think we tell ourselves when it comes to serving transitioning youth. But one of them is that foster care, we have to realize, is not a benign intervention, right? There is harm that happens when a young person is removed from the most important person in their life, which is their family. I understand that their families may not be able to care for them, may not be able to keep them safe. I understand that. But it's still their most important connection.
It's a trauma, whether we want to admit it or not. And we're not blaming the foster family whatsoever. They're great. They're caring. They're compassionate. But they're still coming. That child is coming out of trauma and then going into that environment. I think that's an area that a lot of times we want to just close the book on it. Okay, we've got you in a safe, caring, loving environment. Everything's cool. It's maybe better than being in a dangerous situation. But that doesn't mean the trauma has stopped. In fact, the trauma is just beginning. And there's a process that goes through that. And the longer they're in this process, we know that, then the more you have to work to identify those traumas and begin to try to communicate ways to address those. So in the political world, okay, so let me give my political hat on. Well, let's just get them permanency then. Let's get them adopted, you know? Well, yes, obviously, if the adoption is right, that's a great thing. They become in forever family. Trauma doesn't end there. And I believe that's where you're beginning to look at it. I mean, we have this goal here in Florida to move them through the system quickly. But doesn't necessarily move that child's emotional well-being, their connectivity, their new relationships, how to build relationships, and all of those things. I'm confident that's what your book is going to be addressing.
So the book really lays out a plan that includes adaptive and technical solutions, right? Because we can't automatically, you know, one day declare we care about youth voice, right?
Right.
Which we've done. We do a lot of declaring in child welfare, right? We don't embody, we declare. And so like we declare, you know, we have a you know, child well-being system. Well, just because we changed the name on the building didn't create a well-being system. Because if we truly care about well-being, and this is part of what the book talks about, is then we would address social emotional needs, right? Those social emotional needs are the foundation is connection, right? The foundation is who do these young people have connection with? And so the book lays out who are the people that should be involved in this scaffolding. We'll talk a little bit more about the scaffolding concept, but who are the people that should be involved? What are the programs we should have in place? What kinds of trainings should staff do to be able to really build authentic connections? What kind of structures do we need to change? So what kind of policies do we need to change that aren't supporting connection? So then the last one really is what are the practices, right? This idea of rejecting kids that are in your facility. How does that impact that young person? Is that the best thing for that kid? Because oftentimes what we're doing is we're trying to save the foster care placement as opposed to trying to teach that young person and that family how to resolve interpersonal issues, right? That's what we're here for. We're here to teach and raise up, but we automatically, because we're so afraid of liability, we automatically move right into that space. And so what the book lays out again is those adaptive challenges. So when we talk about youth voice, right now, I feel like, you know, the feds have been saying this for 20 years that we should listen to voices, but it's not a technical thing. In order for us to value and respect and listen to youth voice, we have to slow down. We have to pay attention and we have to build authentic relationships. And right now, youth voice is an afterthought. And the reason I say that, and the reason I want people to, of course, buy the book and to listen to what I'm saying is we would change our structures if we really cared. So I share with you, you know, we're having meetings 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, which is when the young people are in school. So if we're having a meeting about their lives, that's going to impact their lives, they should be at that meeting, right? And our youth would like us to say, no youth, no meeting, right? Because if the young person isn't there, who's the most important person in that room? You want to build agency. You want to build self-worth for these young people. But if we don't engage them in making decisions about their own lives, then what do we expect them to do at 18 if we haven't taught them those skills? And so I think we just need to, again, sometimes in child welfare, we're so, you know, it's right in our face. Sometimes we need to take a step back and say, what does success mean? And is it successful to say in Florida that 750 to 1,000 kids age out every year? So we failed them. We didn't get them a family. We didn't get them permanency. But of all else, we could have gotten them strong relationships so that we're not trying to force them into independence. Independence at age 18, 21, 23 is a fallacy. That is not how the world works. And we should be shooting for interdependence. We should be teaching help-seeking behaviors. We should be, again, scaffolding. Because scaffolds, you think about a scaffold for a building, right? It supports the structure. Well, if the structure is we believe in permanent connections, how can we in child welfare support that structure? We can start by having our own authentic relationships. That's how it begins. Because then you're going to see who these youth are from a different angle. There's a quote that I love that says, you know, young people are not giving you a hard time. They're having a hard time.
You know, I'm going to harken back to pre-COVID. You had a group of kids in Fort Lauderdale. It was probably about 100 kids that you put on to just break in and begin to have conversations. I saw you were trying to build the authentic relationships, and you and I did this event. You asked me to lead it. I'm a former choir pastor type of thing where I would lead music. And we took the tubes. You remember that? And I remember laying the tubes out there on the table and the kids are coming in and you can almost see them in their mind, like, what, whose dumb idea is this? But by the time we started doing it and we started talking about the differences and the unity and that, and when they started listening to the sounds that was coming out of that, it was pretty cool. I was the first time I'd done that.
Boom whackers. Boom, is what they're called. Boom whackers. Yeah.
And it was so cool to bring this group in and bring this group in. And I watched them and all of a sudden there seemed to be an aha moment that was coming into them that understands that their participation in with other folks from diverse perspectives, diverse sounds. And then you took that, that combination, that was kind of, for me, it was kind of a cool thing. Now you and I both worked on One Voice Impact. Our goal was to get youth voice throughout the system of care. Here's the part that I think that, I know that your book it should probably be just the first of many to come because, and I know it's a challenge to write books, but I have to tell you that the foundational principles, many of the things that we've seen kids coming through in and out of the system, they're missing some of those foundational things that families provide. We've got a new grandchild. I love to watch my daughter and my son-in-law, how they interact with this child all the time. Some of these kids never get that kind of action. And so we think by the time they get 18, well, we've had them in our system. We've treated them nicely. We've given them three hots and a cot. And we've done some good things for them. Now they're ready to go out and tackle the world. I mean, I think we're actually set up here in Florida to do better because of our model that we have, the community. It's not a one-size-fits-all government model. But I think that we've got to turn the spotlight more on this in this area. Hopefully that's where you're heading with your next venture.
Yeah. So first of all, I don't think I mentioned the name of the book. It's called Follow the Love and Permanent Connection Scaffolding. And the reason it's called Follow the Love, in my time in getting to know some of these young people, I have found that many of them already have people they love and people who love them. Because when we're talking to young people, we're often talking about placement. If you take placement off the table, you will open the window to other connections because a relational permanency doesn't have to equate to placement, right? And many of our young people are very hesitant about adoption because most of the young people who are aging out came into care at age 12 or 14. So they've grown up with their family. They have an allegiance and a loyalty to their family that adoption sort of crushes. That's their fear. And so despite the fact that they may not be open, right? And we know research shows us that 54% of these young people, when they turn 18, will go back to their bio family. Knowing that, what are we doing about that? How are we preparing them for that? How are we supporting the bio family to support these young people?
Building that connectivity.
Right.
That scaffolding that hasn't been there now needs to be defined and worked.
And that's a lie that we tell ourselves, that once we terminate rights, these kids aren't connected to their bio family. That's not true. We know when they run away, that's where they're going, right? And so why are we terminating rights? Why are we shutting down that? And I know those are the rules. I get it. We need to change some of if we believe in connection, if we believe connection is going to create good outcomes for transitioning youth, why aren't we working towards it as opposed to running the other direction? Now, I think it's an evolution. Everything in child welfare is an evolution. We do better when we know better, right? And so I just believe that this is sort of the foundation. And I believe that if we followed the young people, right, if we built trusting relationships, they would be open to share who their village is. I think we can create a much stronger transition for them. And also we should be tapering transition, right? How are we currently, and this is in my book as well, how are we currently assessing if the young person is moving towards self-sufficiency? The only assessment we're doing is a life skills assessment. We're not assessing where they are with understanding their finances. We're not assessing where they are in education or housing or any of those things. We should be doing self-sufficiency matrices. Like, why aren't we doing that? Because then we could actually deliver services based on the young person's needs.
And engaging the critical thinking skill sets, all of these things, all of that's going to help them become successful as they begin to wean away from and become their own person, which is what, frankly, my parents wanted for me and your parents wanted for you and I wanted for my children. And the support mechanism wasn't there throughout those years. So this is where I think our system could learn and do better in those environments and be prepared to say, it's not just about outcomes and we can put a bunch of things so we can go before a Senate committee and say, yeah, we got, you know, 62% of our kids are now in permanency and so forth. Good numbers or whatever they are. I'm not saying that's the numbers, but that's laudable. But that's not the story. That's not the whole. In fact, it's only piece of the story. So I almost tell you, you've got your finger on the pulse of, I think, where child welfare is and the whole well-being is going. It's not about just getting kids safe in a safe environment. I always made this statement that I want to write a book one day, which I probably won't because I'm not as smart as you. But I always said there's going to be a chapter in my book. It's going to be beyond the awe. And people, what does that mean? Because when I tell people, what do you do? Well, I work with abused, abandoned, or organizations that are fighting for children. Oh, that's nice. No. It's challenging. It can be ugly at times. It can be traumatizing even for the people that are engaged in this process. But when we begin to look at the end, when we're bringing this permanency relationship, and then when they become self-sufficient so that they get to experience the blessing of liberty as the next generation, that's really what I want to see happening. And I think that's what we're looking carefully. We look at education and say, this is really what you're supposed to do. We ought to be looking carefully at the foster care, child welfare world that we're involved in and looking at. I think your book is, you're kind of on you're the tip of the spear beginning to have this conversation.
Yeah. I mean, listen, there's so much incredible information and research, and I love to see research put into practice. And so research has been telling us this for the last 20 years. Independent living is really in its infancy, right? It really began with the Chafee Act in 1999. We weren't doing much more. And so we're still in our infancy. So we're learning a lot. But over the last year, there has been a ton of research done. But we as a state, we as a nation, the only thing we're collecting as far as outcomes is the National Youth in Transition Database, which gives us back data very slowly and doesn't tell us, right? It doesn't deliver the information we need to be able to shift our services and make sure we're getting good outcomes. And now, interesting, when we talk about outcomes of transitioning youth, all of the research shows that they're doing poorly across all domains, right? And we have a period of time in child welfare, we can change the trajectory of their lives. I really believe that. And it's a solvable problem. Across the nation, we're talking about 20,000 young people. We can fix this problem if we could all come together and start rowing in the same direction. But when I think about outcomes, like often reported, is this number of, up to 30%, you know, are homeless within the first 2 years after they age out, right? Become homeless. And when I hear that number, first of all, when we say negative statistics, what are we trying to achieve? Like, what do I do with that information? Okay, you told me 30% are homeless. What do I do? How do I fix that as someone in the public? How do I fix that? But what I'm more interested in as a researcher is, tell me about those 70%. Who somehow found their way to housing, somehow housed themselves without real supports. I want to follow them around and figure out what they're doing, because that's the majority, right? We get so fixated on these negative numbers and they don't help our young people. Like, if I was a young person in foster care, I hear them say, oh, I'm not a statistic. I'm one of the, you know, 3% that graduates from college. You know, that's not something they should get excited about, right? And so I just think we're looking at it. We're talking about young people in a way that makes them see themselves as less than. And we need to be sharing those success stories, sharing that amazing, right, that you can achieve this. And we're here to help. Nat, when you talked about sort of the structure, the scaffolding structure is intended to come down at the right moment. Right?
It's not there, not there forever.
And for some people, it may be built longer. There may be portions of it that stay up longer. But when you talk about individualized treatment, if we could individualize our treatment and take down that scaffold, when we see that young person succeeding in that area, we would have a different system.
All right. So I'm going to say this too. I've got people all over the United States that we know was watching Nurturing Wellbeing. I was out in California, and I was with folks that do work like I do. And many of them, I didn't realize they were watching us, and they were watching. I hope they see what I see and what I know. And it's how you light up when you talk about this, how there's such a passion, but it's not just passion without the academic background and support. I know you to be a dynamic speaker. I know that you've been in front of large crowds. I know how you work, but it's not just as a model speaker, but it's somebody that actually brings ideas for solutions that can have real good outcomes. I think your book is going to be well received. I'm excited. I'm excited for it. Follow the love. You're going to do a book signing and all of that good stuff.
We'll do a virtual book launch. Okay. We're looking forward to doing that.
Very good. Yeah. Well, and I just want you to know that I think that with the opportunity to go all over the United States and talk about this, and even what you're going to hear from guys like me is, all right, once we begin to look at this, what can we do to offer political support for it? In other words, can we go in and look at policy that doesn't just come from think tanks out of Washington, D.C. or Tallahassee, Florida or Sacramento or any place like that, but that you begin to work with them and say, here's some policy that works and so forth, and here will be the better outcome. I look forward to that conversation. Dr. Winter, I know that you're going to be very successful in your next opportunity. First of all, I'm glad I could even get the opportunity to have you on this, because I know your schedule is about to get really crazy. We're very thankful for you. The opportunity to put your book out there and start this conversation. I'll give you the closing words, anything you'd like to say.
So I think the book, Follow the Love, that really talks about permanent connection scaffolding, is a path forward. And we need a path forward. We need to change the way we see things, change the way we value young people and their voice, and remember how important connection is. You know, as adults, you think about connection in your life and what that has meant for you and how that has enriched your life and supported you during hard times and been there during great times. Don't all of us need that? All of us need connection and a sense of belonging. These young people don't know who they are and where they belong. And if you can imagine figuring out your identity going through the foster care system, it's very difficult. And so we've got to help them build agency and a sense of control and understanding of their lives. And we can do that. We have the power to do that. And I'm excited about that.
Not only are we excited for what you're doing, I'm excited about your book, and I'm excited what your future is going to bring and how you're going to impact and have a real impact across the United States and, frankly, other places in the world. Thank you, Dr. Elizabeth Winter, for being here with us today.